Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cold Fury by Daphne Loveling. Narrated by Troy Duran and Anastasia Whatley. Chapter 1. Fury.
Let me out of here! God damn it!
The prisoner shouts. Panic sharpens Spanner's voice like a knife. He strains against the ropes holding his wrists, which are tightly bound above his head. The hook he's attached to pulls him upright so that he's almost suspended in midair. The balls of his feet scrabble to stay connected to the ground. A sheen of sweat slicks his bare chest. His eyes bulge. He stinks of fear. It's a scent I know well. No can do, motherfucker. My words are casual, but there's an undercurrent of tension in my voice. It betrays the anger that I keep on a tight leash. You know better than that. You done fucked up, son.
I didn't do anything,
Spanner insists, still grappling for purchase on the ground. I gotta hand it to him. He's dumb, but he's holding on to the lie. Too bad it won't do him a damn bit of good. Looking over to one side, I make eye contact with Venom and Voodoo. They're the president and sergeant-at-arms of the Ankeny, Iowa chapter of the Royal Bastards MC. This isn't my chapter. Mine's up in Minneapolis. I'm down here on the orders of Magnus, my own president, to oversee the punishment of a former prospect for the Minneapolis Club. I'm the sergeant-at-arms of the Minneapolis chapter. As such, I'm here to make sure that this son of a bitch pays for what he's done, and to make goddamn sure he'll never have the chance to do it again.
I don't know what you're talking about,
Spanner yells, still trying to convince me.
Fury, come on, man. This is a mistake. You know me, man. I didn't do anything.
He locks eyes with me, hoping I'll buy his bullshit. But I know better. The way his tongue flicks over his lips when he's lying is one of his tells. Besides, we have proof. Spanner came to us as a hang-around. He moved up to Prospect about a year later. The dude was eager. Ambitious, for sure. A little too ambitious, as it turns out. We'll never know if he made the decision to prospect because he genuinely wanted to be a royal bastard or for some other ulterior motive. Either way, a few months after he got his prospect patch, one of our rival clubs started making moves that made us suspicious that we had a rat in our midst. Based on the intel the rival club seemed to be acting on, we knew it wasn't someone high up in our ranks. But it was clear there was someone on the inside, selling secrets to our enemies. And we had our suspicions that Spanner was the traitor. We caught the motherfucker by setting him up to eavesdrop on a conversation between our prez and VP, Magnus and Norse. They fed him false info about the location of a storehouse that supposedly held a shipment of guns we were set to transport up north to Canada. When the storehouse was broken into and ransacked a couple days later, we knew for sure Spanner was the one who had sold us out. He figured out we were on to him and fled south across the Minnesota border before we could nab him. But stupid fuckers do stupid shit, and Spanner forgot one crucial thing. The royal bastards are everywhere. Iowa is royal bastards territory, you dumb asshole, I rasp. Running down here wasn't going to get you anywhere. You should have known you were going to get caught.
I didn't do anything,
he insists again. Christ, it's getting goddamn old. I swear to fucking God, it's a compulsion with some people to keep lying in a desperate attempt to save their own skin, even when it's obvious the game's over. It's almost comical, like he thinks we're just going to say, oh, you didn't? Well, mercy me, our mistake. We'll just let you go then. Please accept our apologies. Shut up, you piece of shit traitor. Angel, the enforcer for the Ankeny crew, barks. Lightning fast, a blade appears in his hand. Before I have a chance to register the movement, he sliced a shallow trench across Spanner's naked stomach. Blood beads on his skin and begins to drip downwards, mingling with his fear-putrid sweat and thin, pathetic rivulets. Lying to our faces is just going to make this worse for you, I snarl. Besides, it's too fucking late. There ain't a single thing you can say to save your sorry ass now. Fury is my road name. Vengeance is my drug. Hurting people who need to be hurt gives me a hard-on. And no one needs to be hurt more than someone who has betrayed the Royal Bastards MC. The Ankeny chapter of the Royal Bastards has a couple of legit enterprises. One of them is a biological cleaning business. The other one is a hog farm, which is where we are right now. We're standing in the yard, only a couple dozen feet from the outdoor hog enclosure. The hogs are milling around, snuffling, and making excited noises. Seems to me that the smell of Spanner's blood has caught their attention. The Ankeny Club's two legit businesses have some other less legit applications as well. Both of them can help with cleanup of some less-than-legal biological messes. Because these hogs, they've developed a taste for meat. I step closer to the trader. "You were an ambitious dude. You had promise, I won't lie," I say. He flinches at my use of the past tense. His chest is heaving in and out with fear. I take out a pack of smokes and shake one out, lighting it. "But ambition is a dangerous thing. Ambition without loyalty, well, that can get you in some serious fucking trouble. Of course, it's really too late to be giving you advice. You ain't gonna need it any longer. You're done, Spanner." I take a long drag of the cigarette, drawing the smoke deep into my lungs. Then, exhaling, I take a moment to contemplate the orange ember on the end. Reaching out, I extinguish the cigarette on the bare skin of his chest. Spanner throws his head back and lets out a howl of pain that mingles with the squealing of the hogs in the pen. His body jerks back, straining and writhing. "Oh, shit," I chuckle. "If you think that hurts, you're about to be in for a bad damn time, son." Still straining away from me, Spanner's scream dies as he stares at me in terror, the whites of his eyes showing. He starts to babble, incoherent pleading noises that I cut off with a wave of the now-dead cigarette. "I only wish the rest of the Minneapolis Royal Bastards could be here to enjoy this moment." I let my lips spread into a grin. "But I'll tell them all about it. Funny coincidence, you coming down here to Iowa like this." "Fitting, too." I nod back at the hog enclosure. "The punishment is going to really fit the crime. You know what they say, Spanner? Pigs get fed. Hogs, though, they get slaughtered." I make a sign to Voodoo, who's operating the bobcat. He moves a lever, and the winch on the crane hoists Spanner by the ropes around his wrists. Spanner starts to scream again, flailing his legs wildly. The bobcat lifts him up high, then over, until he's suspended above the enclosure. Next to me, Hawk lets out a snort. "They ain't been fed for a while. Doubt this will take long." "Pity," I murmur, and light another cigarette. Voodoo lets the prospect loose. Spanner drops down into enclosure on top of a couple of the hogs, which startles them and pisses them off. They surround him, and within seconds, Spanner starts to shriek. That just enrages the beasts more. They begin to tear him apart, their squeals of excitement mixing with Spanner's screams. A sense of calm descends on me as I watch and listen to the grim spectacle in front of me. The bloody justice of the club has been done, the cosmic scoreboard rebalanced. When the hog's feeding frenzy is over, we all turn away. The prospect is not only dead, he might as well never have existed. All that's left of him now is his bike. I'll leave it down here for the Ankeny Club to remove the VIN and do whatever they want with it. A small thank you gift for disposing of the body. "You sticking around to party with us tonight, brother?" Voodoo asks me as we walk toward our own bikes. "Yeah, be good to let off some steam. Venom told me there's an empty apartment at your clubhouse with my name on it tonight. I'll suck down as much of your free booze as I can and head back up to Minneapolis tomorrow." "Good deal," Voodoo says, clapping me on the back. "We ain't had a decent rager for a while. Got a feeling the club's gonna be rocking tonight. We'll pull out all the stops for you." While we wait for the other men to get to their bikes, I call my prez, Magnus. Last I heard, he was up fishing in northern Minnesota, so I ain't sure whether I'll get a hold of him. But he answers on the second ring. "Talk to me." Magnus, always a man of few words, barks into the phone. "Yo, prez. Thought I was going to have to leave a message. Didn't expect you to have decent cell service. We're on our way back down to the cities. We're filling up our tanks before heading back down. You caught me just at the right time. You still down in Ankeny?" "Yep. Mission accomplished." "Happy to hear that." The edge in his voice sharpens. That situation needed to be dealt with. Yeah, well, it's been dealt with and disappeared. The hogs took care of that. Magnus grunts his approval. Where are you at now? On our way back to the Ankeny clubhouse. Planning to stay the night down here if you're good with it. Yep, I'll let Norris and the rest of them know you took care of the problem. I'll check in once I'm back in Minneapolis. You do that. See you at home, brother. Good work. Gotcha, Prez. I pocket my phone, fire up my bike, and head back with the others to the Ankeny clubhouse. It's going to be a good night.
Chapter 2. Cat. So, brunch this weekend? Christy asks. I don't know. I stall, trying to think of an excuse. Can I get back to you? I'm sitting at the nurse's station with one shoe off, massaging an aching foot. My colleague and good friend Christy is standing on the other side of the desk, looking at me hopefully. We're in a rare lull in an otherwise chaotic and understaffed emergency department at Fairdale Hospital, where I've worked as a nurse for about 6 months. I love being a nurse. The last couple of years have been difficult, to say the least, but even so, I still feel that this job is my calling. It's a privilege to work with all of the talented people in this profession, and I found that I thrive on the fast pace of emergency medicine. The highs are stratospheric, and I've learned to deal with the lows and think of them as just part of the package. Are you seriously going to try to wuss out on me again? Christy squints at me in disapproval. You never come out with me. There's this new place on West 7th in St. Paul that people are raving about. How can you not want to post up at a table in front of a bottomless glass of mimosas and a plate of delicious carbs? Day drinking is the best cure for stress. Come on, Kat. You know you want to. I hesitate, wishing I could say yes. It's not that I don't want to go out and let loose a little. I'd love to spend a lazy Sunday morning thinking about nothing but what I'm going to grab at my next round at the buffet. Unfortunately, my bank account doesn't agree. It's just that money's a little tight, I murmur. Ugh, you always say that. Christy shakes her cascade of blonde hair, which she wears down instead of in a ponytail like most of the nurses who have long hair. Her pretty face is made up to perfection. She looks glamorous even in nursing scrubs. I swear, she looks more like an actress playing a nurse in a TV show than an actual nurse, she's that put together. You are way too hyper-focused on paying off your student loans, Christy complains. One brunch isn't going to make a huge difference. You have to have fun sometimes, too, you know? Otherwise, you'll get burned out. She waves her hand around impatiently. This job is too hard for you to not de-stress whenever you can, girl. Come on, come out with me. Hell, I'll even pay. No, it's okay. I begin, but a voice behind me interrupts us.
Did someone say going out?
Adam Latto, one of the residents, comes up behind Christy.
Where are we going?
He gives her hourglass figure an appreciative once-over. You are not invited, sir, Christy says to him dismissively, barely giving him a glance. Learn to stay in your lane.
Damn, that's cold.
Dr. Latto flashes her a grin of even white teeth.
Come on now, don't be like that.
Christy whirls to face him. Like what? She asks, a challenge in her eyes. Dr. Latto opens his mouth to respond, but seems to think better of it.
Sheesh,
he mutters.
Forget I said anything.
Christy pointedly turns her back on him. After a few seconds, he gets the picture and picks up a chart, pretending to look at it. A few seconds later, he sets it down and wanders off. Christy sighs. God, what is it with them? All the male doctors in this hospital think they're God's gift to women, I swear. It's a stereotype that any nurse would be thrilled to have captured the interest of a reasonably handsome up-and-coming doctor. But Christy does not fit the stereotype. Not only is she beautiful enough to be a supermodel, she's also smart as a whip. probably smarter than most of the doctors here. But she still has trouble being taken seriously because of her bombshell figure and looks. Male doctors are always flirting with her or even openly hitting on her. More than one patient has tried to cop a feel. Christy has learned to instantly shut down any banter that seems even vaguely sexual in nature. As a result, she's earned a reputation as a bitch and a hard ass, which she doesn't mind a bit. I know better, though. She might have a tough, no-nonsense exterior, but underneath, she definitely wants a relationship. She told me as much. It's just that the man or woman who eventually steals her heart will have to be someone who values her first for her personality and intellect, not her smoking hot body. Christy and I continue to go back and forth about brunch, until I finally relent and agree to meet her at the new place on West 7th. I figure I can get something small that doesn't cost very much. After all, she's right. I really could use something to look forward to this weekend, to take my mind off, well, everything, really. At the end of my shift, I change out of my scrubs and into street clothes, making a mental note to do laundry when I get home. It's a sunny day out, so I grab the ball cap I keep in my bag and put that on, too, pulling my ponytail through the back loop. On the way to the main lobby, I peek out the front windows and see Jimmy, a homeless veteran who hangs out in the front of the hospital sometimes. I make a quick detour to the cafeteria to buy him a sandwich and a pop. "Hey, Jimmy!" I wave to him as I approach the bench where he's sitting.
"Cat, how you doing, baby?"
He grins at me with a mouthful full of messed up teeth. I hand him the sandwich, tuna salad on soft white bread, and the Coke, and sit down next to him. "Good. How about you?"
"Doing okay."
He accepts the food without comment and unwraps the sandwich, taking a bite.
"You know what?"
he asks casually.
"I ordered a chicken and an egg online."
I stop in the midst of pulling out my sunglasses. "You what?"
"Yeah."
He waits a beat, deadpan.
"I'll let you know which comes first."
I let out a snort of laughter, slapping my shades onto my face against the bright sun. Jimmy is an endless supply of corny jokes. Even though I know this, somehow he still manages to get one by me sometimes if I'm not ready for it. We chat for a few minutes, enjoying the sunshine. He catches me up on gossip about some of the people he knows in the neighborhood. He tells me his brother's been trying to reach out to him. "Your older brother?" I ask. "The one who lives out in Eden Prairie?"
"Yeah. He always tries to get in touch around this time of year. Both our parents died around now. Guess he feels guilty or something. He's Catholic now, converted because of his wife."
"It's nice he's making an effort, though, right?"
It ain't real, though. Steve don't really care about me. He just wants me to do what he wants me to do, you know? I mean, it ain't like he gives me any money. He ain't offering to let me stay in his house or anything. He just don't want a brother who's a homeless guy."
It's a bleak thing to say about his only living family, but I don't try to argue with him. Gently, I steer Jimmy away from the subject of his brother, letting him talk and tell me jokes I've heard from him dozens of times before. As he finishes his sandwich, my cell buzzes, and I pull it out to see who it is. "Well, what a coincidence," I tell Jimmy, holding up the phone for him to see. "It's my brother calling." My brother Quad never actually calls me. Most of the time he texts, and even then it's usually to ask me for a favor. Still, I haven't heard from him for a while, so I decide I need to answer. "Hello?" The background noise of music and voices makes it hard to hear him.
"Cat?"
he shouts into the phone.
"Hey, can you come down to the G-spot? I need a favor."
Of course he needs something. Why else would he be calling? Quad, I just got off work. I'm on my way home to relax. Can it wait for another time?
Come on. I need you to take Kelly. Carla dumped her off on me this morning and she ain't answering her phone.
You've got the baby at a bar? I squeak. And not just any bar, a damn biker bar. God, leave it to my brother to bring his own child to a place that a lot of adults wouldn't necessarily feel safe going to.
Well, yeah, what the hell else was I supposed to do?
He shoots back impatiently, like it's obvious.
That's why I need you to come pick her up.
Jesus God. I let out a sigh so noisy that Jimmy cocks a brow at me. I roll my eyes at the phone. Idiot, I mouth. He gives me an understanding nod. Where's Carla, Quad?
She ain't talking to me. She was letting me stay at her place, but she threw me out again.
Before I can ask for details, he changes the subject.
Look, I've got the money I owe you, too.
He wheedles.
Come on, Cat. Come to the bar and I'll give it to you.
Damn it. Quad owes me $500, which is part of the reason he's been avoiding me for weeks. He's playing the trump card. Quad is my only brother. My only family, to be more precise. Between that and wanting to get my niece out of a bar full of drunk bikers, I feel like I have no choice but to agree. Okay, I say, blowing out a breath. I can be there in about 15 or 20 minutes. I say goodbye to Jimmy and go back into the hospital, taking the elevator to the floor of the parking ramp where my car is parked. It's a crappy, ancient compact, but it does have the one advantage of a sunroof, which I open as soon as I'm out of the ramp. Having the wind and sun on me lifts my spirits just a little as I drive over to the G-spot to confront my brother. When I get to the bar, however, the biker that's sitting out in the parking lot on his motorcycle isn't Quad at all. It's Hooch, my brother's asshole best friend. Quad and Hooch belong to a local motorcycle club called the Eagle's Talon. The Talon are a bunch of thugs, involved in shady dealings of various types that I try to know as little about as possible. Hooch is large and meaty, and though some women might find him attractive, the only reaction he elicits from me is revulsion. He exudes a dangerous kind of determination, like he's already decided what he wants and he'll be damned if anything will ever stop him from taking it. Setting my jaw, I climb out of my car and make a beeline for the front entrance of the bar, pretending not to see Hooch. I'm hoping that if I don't acknowledge him, he'll leave me alone. But no such luck.
Hey,
he shouts at me.
Your brother ain't in there.
That stops me short. What?
He ain't in there. He left a few minutes ago.
But he told me he...
Yeah, I know.
Hooch takes a few steps toward me. I try to ignore the greasy way his eyes slide over my body.
Carla came into the bar right after he called you. They left together.
Damn it! Typical Quad, only ever thinking about himself. Why couldn't he at least have the decency to call me and let me know?
Eh, well, that's Quad, right?
Hooch shrugs, then gives me a cocky grin.
Come on in, I'll buy you a drink.
No, I grumble, shaking my head. I'm not in the mood, I'm just gonna go home.
Come on,
he repeats. He's close enough now to put a large hand around my bicep. He gives my arm a slight tug.
One drink. And then, hey, I'll take you to Quad. You can go get the money he owes you.
He told you about that, did he? I ask, trying to pull my arm away.
Nah.
His grin grows wider.
I heard him talking to you on the phone.
Just tell me where he went. I finally get my arm away. I'll drive there myself.
Nope. The price of me telling you is one ride on my bike. I'll drive you there and bring you right back here to your car when we're done.
I don't want to go chase him down, Hooch. At least not with you. There's something about his offer that makes me nervous. Besides, I doubt he even had my money. He was probably just using that as a lure to get me here. I turn away to go, but Hooch grabs me again. This time, his hand is like a vice around my arm.
Come on. One drink ain't gonna hurt you.
Let me go, I cry, pulling away. But this time, his hand is like a vice around my arm.
Don't be a little bitch.
Hooch grabs my other arm, twisting me to him. I'm so close to him now that I can smell the beer on his breath.
You walking around acting like your shit don't stink,
he rasps.
You're gonna lose the fucking attitude and come in and have a beer with me. You got that? Now come on.
No. Fuck you, Hooch. Let me go, I shout. Desperately, I look over at the front door to the bar, but no one is coming out. There's no one else in the parking lot. I'm on my own. As I continue to struggle, my eyes lock onto his face. All pretense of friendliness is gone from his eyes. Instead, there's a grim, angry determination. And something else. Something even more frightening. Hunger.
Chapter 3. Fury. The next day, I don't get out of Ankeny until afternoon, after a shitload of coffee and a big mess of eggs and bacon. The party at the clubhouse was a rager, just like Voodoo predicted. It went until all hours. As it turned out, I barely used the apartment for sleep at all. Venom set me up with two of his club bunnies who looked for all the world like identical twins. I crashed there for a few hours around daybreak, after a night of booze, loud-ass music, and pussy. I stay in Iowa until the coffee chases all the booze out of my system. Then I head back up north after saying goodbye to Venom and the rest of them. The ride up to Minneapolis is uneventful. There ain't really a scenic route to speak of, so the only good choice involves a boring-as-fuck stretch of Interstate 35. Straight, flat, and featureless, except for the steady stream of 18-wheelers hauling who knows what, who knows where. Still, once I cross over the state line to Minnesota, the landscape starts to change. Subtle signs indicate that I'm getting closer to home. There's something about Minnesota that gets in your blood. Maybe it's the smell of crisp white winter, which sometimes comes to you even in the swell of the summer heat. It's the smell of evergreens in the sun and clean, clear lake water. For me, there's nothing like it. I've been all over this country, but I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. By the time I get close to the Twin Cities, it's late afternoon. I decide to stop for a beer before checking in at the clubhouse. There's a bar I like in South Minneapolis called the G-Spot. The G-Spot attracts all types of people, and is pretty popular with bikers of all stripes. It's in neutral territory, and generally speaking, different clubs manage to peacefully coexist when they're in there. Funny coincidence, I end up running into another Iowa biker brother at the G-Spot on the way into the bar. His name is Memphis, and he's a former member of the Des Moines chapter of the Demented Sons MC. Memphis's Uncle Ox is one of our Minneapolis RBMC crew. I ain't seen him in a while, so I almost don't recognize him. Shit, son, I sure as hell didn't expect to run into your ass, I greet Memphis, slapping him on the back. Ox mentioned you were coming up here to pay him a visit, but I didn't figure we'd cross paths. Least of all here. Good to see you, Fury, Memphis says. Cross paths is right. I'm headed back down I-35, but figured I'd stop in here and wet my whistle before I left town. Great minds think alike. Let me buy you a beer. He turns around and follows me back inside. I signal to the bartender, and we take a couple of seats at the bar. You hear I left the Demented Sons? Memphis asked. Yeah, I hear you're patching into the Dallas Royal Bastards. I grin. Welcome to the club, brother. Ox told me all about it. Thanks. It was time for a change. Speaking of which, my road name's Ares now. So noted, brother. So, Dallas, eh? What prompted that? Our beers arrive, and Memphis, Ares, picks his up and takes a long swig. You know, like I said, it's time for a change. Warmer weather, all that shit. He looks away instead of giving me a direct answer, like he's thinking about something he doesn't want to talk about. I know from Ox that Memphis had a girl he was in love with who died a while back. I didn't get the whole story, but from what Ox told me, she died in his arms. I guess he hasn't been the same since. which is understandable. I sure as hell ain't gonna pry into that if it's part of the reason he's leaving Iowa. We shoot the shit for a while.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?